This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, this is Mark Breitenstein. I'm reading from eatingwell.com for this first week of May of 2024. And go to the news section of the website and take up an article entitled Dave's Killer Bread just released a new high-fiber product that you'll want with dinner every night. This comes from Jessica Bell. It's reviewed by dietitian Jessica Bell, but it's written by Dylan Evans. Before special dinners, I often go to the bread aisle to meet an inevitable realization. Not only had I run out of the time and motivation to make some of the best homemade rolls, but also the bread selection had little to no whole grain and whole wheat dinner roll options. Maybe it's the way they activate your taste buds, or simply the influence of Texas Roadhouse's infamous bread baskets. But dinner rolls truly make the Southern dinner table go round. As a Georgia boy who wants to prioritize protein and fiber, I've often always struggled with how difficult it is to find whole wheat and whole grain rolls at the grocery store. Until now. Dave's Killer Bread, DKB, company known for its organic bread products, just released its newest Rock in Rolls. The 12-pack of whole wheat grain dinner rolls uses their signature blend, 21 grains and seeds, and it features exactly the first ingredients I've been looking for, whole wheat flour. It was an exciting day when I found out the product was on its way to the stores. An even more exciting moment when I got to try them for myself. Many dinner rolls emphasize a shiny, egg-washed surface. The exterior texture of DKB's, on the other hand, takes on a more delicate crumb you get from rustic sandwich bread. The tops are also sprinkled with plenty of whole grains and seeds used in the bread, including oats, sunflower seeds, sesame seeds, and flaxseed. These, combined with the wheat flour mixture used in the dough, gives the rolls a nutty and tangy flavor. I find they taste very similar to sourdough, with a soft texture that's reminiscent of other popular dinner rolls. The Rock in Rolls aren't too shabby in the nutrition department either. Similar to common refined wheat rolls, each serving is 3 grams of added sugar. However, that comes along with 3 grams of dietary fiber per serving, which meets our high fiber nutrition parameters. The amount of fiber in these rolls is my favorite aspect of the product. Fiber is a nutrient I prioritize in my eating pattern, since it helps me feel satisfied quickly and stay full longer. And a few grams can go a long way in helping you enjoy your meals in moderation. Not to mention, the whole grains and seeds that contribute this fiber content offer other nutrients like antioxidants, vitamins, healthy fats that your body needs to thrive. Additionally, every serving has 5 grams of protein, which helps add even more staying power. Protein is an essential macronutrient that's key to many bodily functions like healthy digestion, bone strength, muscle recovery, and more. So I love these dinner rolls. Having a couple extra grams compared to refined grain varieties that might have only 2 or 3 grams. DKB's new rolls are both nutrient-dense and really flavorful. They're good enough that I'm making them the star of the show on even weeknights. In fact, I just enjoyed some steamed rock and rolls as sliders with crispy cod, tartar sauce, and American cheese. I would say I couldn't stop eating them. But as I mentioned, these rolls are seriously filling. You could use them as your go-to whole grain rolls for a number of delicious recipes like our vegetarian antipasto sliders, or serve them as a side dish with dinners like our new chicken Milanese with arugula cherry tomato salad. No matter the setting, I'm sure you and your household will love them. And that's the word on Dave's rock and roll, Dave's killer bread rock and roll. Rock and rolls. Go back to the news here. Childhood obesity may be linked to iron deficiency, according to new study from the British Journal of Medicine. If you have any kiddies running around. Childhood obesity is a growing concern worldwide that can impact children's health, development, and quality of life. A recent study published on April 9th of 2024 in the BMJ Global Health highlights a lesser-known aspect of this issue. The link between obesity in iron deficiency in children and young adults. This finding is critical as iron deficiency in children can have various adverse effects, including impaired brain function, attention, concentration, and memory. It can also increase the risk of conditions such as autism and ADHD. Read on to learn more about what the study's findings and what it means for your children's nutritional well-being. So what the study found. Nutrition scientists at the University of Leeds and researchers from the School of Food Science and Nutrition analyzed data from thousands of medical studies involving children and adolescents under the age of 25 from 44 countries where iron levels and other vitamin and mineral levels were recorded in addition to weight. The research team found that iron deficiency was associated with both underweight and overweight children, suggesting that malnutrition in its various forms can impact children regardless of their weight issues and status. Lead study author Xiaomian Tan, doctoral researcher at the University of Leeds, said in a statement, "The relationship between undernutrition and critical micronutrients for childhood growth and development is well established, but less is known about the risk of deficiencies in iron, vitamin A, and zinc in children and adolescents who are overweight or obese, making this a hidden form of malnutrition. The study also brings attention to the often overlooked connection between malnutrition and obesity. Even if someone is in a calorie excess, they can still be nutrient deficient. This finding emphasizes the importance of looking beyond calorie content, considering the nutritional value of the foods children consume. Food security and food access play a crucial role in childhood obesity and malnutrition. In lower and middle-income countries, where hunger has traditionally been a significant concern, obesity is now emerging as a health issue, leading to what is known as hidden hunger, according to research. Limited access to nutritious foods can contribute to obesity and nutrient deficiencies, highlighting the need for policies and interventions that improve food access and support healthy eating habits. Our research is hugely important given the high prevalence of obesity in children. We hope it will lead to increased recognition of the problem by healthcare practitioners and improvements in clinical practice and care, said Tan. The bottom line, by the new study, the University of Leeds suggests that limited access to nutritious foods can contribute to obesity and nutrient deficiencies. These findings highlight the need for policies and interventions that improve food access and address nutrient deficiencies by promoting healthy eating habits in children. Further research, of course, is needed to develop effective strategies for addressing nutrient deficiencies in children worldwide. And that's the news from there. And I saw one other article I thought you might find interesting. Scrolling down, here we go. These small changes helped me lose 110 pounds. In 2000, and this is written by Stephanie Cameron. In 2015, I sold everything I owned to travel the world. Already at an unhealthy weight for me, I believed traveling would help me get fit. Daily, for 4 years, I awoke in incredible spots in 25 countries around the world. But I struggled to explore them. Being 5 feet 5 inches tall and 350 pounds made simple routines a challenge, let alone exploring new worlds. My nomad dream ended in 2019 in a Sicilian rooftop terrace apartment where the 88 steps up to my suite left me in daily agony. I realized I needed to stop traveling and change my life. I had a new dream, staying alive. I wanted to be healthy. My mother died when she was 57 years old. And here I was at age 46. Was I nearing my final chapter, or could I change my future? I decided I could. My goal was to be healthier at 50 than it was at 40. It was a hell of a mountain to climb. But I started with one good new habit at a time, starting with moving back to Canada. So far, I've lost 150 pounds, and I recently bought my first large-sized shirt in 15 years, after previously reaching size 4X. Once, unable to walk a half mile without breaks, now I can walk 7 miles or more without pain or consequences. I've got further to go, but I created a healthy lifestyle I enjoy, and I look forward to decades of new adventures. Here's how I got here. Number one, I live a walking lifestyle. Like many others, I moved in the early months of the pandemic. I went home to Victoria, British Columbia, Canada, and now live a 15-minute walk from downtown and shops, just 5 minutes from the park and the ocean. My feet take me to most places. But I supplement my lifestyle with a car share membership and buses. Shopping is a breeze with my granny cart, which painlessly hauls a week's groceries home in a single trip. I stretch and do light qigong while watching TV, and I'm fitter than I've been in 15 years. Number two, I don't drink calories, or count calories for that matter. I love eating, but living in Europe for 2 years and guzzling wine like it was my life choice force is partly how I reach my heaviest weight. Not drinking calories means I don't fret about counting them any either. Smoothies might taste good, but they never satisfy my hunger. I don't tend to worry about day-to-day totals because I find my consumption tends to work itself out over the course of a week. I may eat lighter vegan meals one day and have a ribeye steak the next. That's where the next point comes in. I cook almost everything I eat. Years of traveling without having access to a proper kitchen, constantly eating out, left me longing for a well-stocked kitchen. When my nomad life ended, I dove into cooking. I learned to make pasta in Rome. So when I came home, I made pasta from scratch. I kneaded and shaped loaves of bread while stews simmered all day on my stove. From there, I stumbled into a passion for scratch-made food. Everything from yogurt and salsa, to chili crisp, and complex curries. And I recently realized I was gluten intolerant. I saw it as a challenge to find a few good recipes, not a radical new lifestyle designed on deprivation. And I've had great success. The additional time I spend in the kitchen may be comparable to time others spend in the gym, but it's something I enjoy in a habit I can keep for life. My fourth habit. I'm always watching cooking shows. We weren't all born with a gift of parents or family who appreciated the finer points of vegetable cookery. I grew up in a 70s meat and potatoes home. Eating boiled veggies was the way to eat veggies. While travel helped open my eyes to new vegetables and preparations, real inspiration has been cooking shows. At the start of the pandemic, a Portuguese Twitter buddy got me hooked on MasterChef Australia, with its 50-plus episodes a season set in a vegetable-loving nation. It helped me think of meat as the side and vegetables as the star. Recently, I seared harissa-rubbed cauliflower steaks in a cast iron pan and served it with a walnut and parsley salsa, inspired by recipes from Simon Toohey, one of the Aussie MasterChef finalists, and famed cookbook author Yotam Ottolenghi. Afterward, I immediately had an identity crisis. Who had I become? Someone healthy, it turns out. Fifth tip, I started growing my own herbs. My 5-by-15-foot balcony is home to a mini jungle of 20 herbs, salad greens, ever-bearing strawberries, and a few 10-gallon bags of tomatoes. All I have to do is step outside and snip chives to sprinkle over scrambled eggs, or tarragon to rub over a chicken before I roast it. For a few months each year, fresh salad is always at my fingertips. Feels fancy, but it's so easy. Plus, nothing recharges me more when working from home than 5 minutes on my balcony in the spring and summer, surrounded by my container garden of produce. Sixth tip, I'm mindful about what I eat or drink after dinner. I'm not strict about an end time for eating because life is so beautifully inconsistent. Flexibility is important. But if I eat at 9 p.m. or so, I won't nosh till 10 or 11 the next morning. I work from home, so I have that flexibility. Call it intermittent fasting if you want. But for me, it's less about cutting calories than it is about ending destructive behavior. For example, as a traveler, I drank a bottle of wine at a night, which led to a little taste won't hurt attitude when it came to snacking along with my vino. Today, I may have more fruit. I may have fruit after dinner or bitter hot cocoa. That's all, if I want good digestion and peaceful sleep. Seventh tip is I focus on feelings, not numbers. The scale isn't my friend. The wrong meal, the wrong calibration, Suddenly, self-worth can go out the window because of a number. If I worried about the scale, I'd have given up long ago. My weight can fluctuate as 5 pounds in a day, and it took years to understand why. I stopped judging myself for it. Instead, I focus on how I feel, how walking feels, how roomy that chair is, how my clothes fit. That feeling is what success feels like. I'm glad I allowed myself to be present in the worst of how I felt before my fitness journey began. I'll never forget hitting my rock bottom that sunny day on a rooftop in Palermo, Sicily, overlooking a centuries-old world with a broken heart because I was in far too much pain to explore it. There, I gave up on what was then the adventure of my lifetime. Today, I have a new life. I long to return to that city, those cobblestones, and the possibilities within those twisting old alleyways, because the joy of exploration never needs to elude me again. All right, there we have another engaging and interesting article from Stefani Cameron. And let's see, let's go over to meal plans here for the time we have left. And I'm going to meal planning 101. Seven-day high-fiber meal plan. Nah, always feel constipated, created by a dietitian. Oh, well, why not? There's all kinds of these things in here. Interesting ways in which they gather food together. All right. Feeling backed up? You're not alone. Constipation impacts about 16 out of 100 adults in the U.S. While occasional bouts of constipation can be expected if you suddenly change up your eating routine or are traveling, chronic constipation often requires more of an intervention. Chronic constipation is defined as having infrequent stool, difficult stool passage, or both for at least 3 months. If you believe you have chronic constipation, it's helpful to check in with your medical provider. Medications and certain conditions like diabetes, hypothyroidism, and irritable bowel syndrome can all cause constipation. Of course, diet and lifestyle factors like not getting enough fiber and fluids can also increase the incidence of constipation. So, we've read about eating more fiber and hydrating and exercise to take care of that. And high fiber foods to focus on should include fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts, seeds, and legumes. So here's their week of high fiber foods. It says how to meal prep your week of meals. Make quinoa and chia oatmeal mix to have for breakfast throughout the week. And prepare a 20-minute white bean soup to have for lunch on days 2 through 5. So, breakfast, day 1, would be a serving of blackberry smoothie. That's 316 calories. An AM snack would be 131 calories with a large pear. Lunch would be a serving of bell pepper and feta chickpea salad. Snack, a serving of cottage cheese snack jar. And dinner, a serving of lemon herb salmon with caponata and farro. So let's look at some of those recipes. How about the lemon herb salmon and caponata and farro? 5 stars. from the 8 reviewers. Says this takes about 50 minutes total time. Ingredients call for 2 cups of water, 2/3 of a cup of farro, 1 medium eggplant cut into 1-inch cubes, 1 red bell pepper cut into 1-inch pieces, 1 summer squash cut into 1-inch pieces, 1 small onion cut into 1-inch pieces, 1.5 cups of cherry tomatoes, 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 3/4 of a teaspoon of salt, divide it, 1/2 teaspoon of ground pepper, divide it, 2 tablespoons of capers, rinsed and chopped, 1 tablespoon of red wine vinegar, 2 teaspoons of honey, 1.25 pounds of wild salmon, cut into 4 portions, 1 teaspoon of lemon zest, 1/2 teaspoon of Italian seasoning, lemon wedges for serving. Directions. Position racks in upper and lower thirds of oven. Preheat to 450 degrees Fahrenheit. Line 2 rimmed baking sheets with foil and coat with cooking spray. Meanwhile, bring water and farro to a boil in a saucepan. Reduce heat to low. Cover and simmer until just tender, about 30 minutes. Drain if necessary. Step 3. Toss the eggplant, bell pepper, squash, onion, tomatoes with oil, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of pepper in a large bowl. Divide between the prepared baking sheets. Roast on the upper and lower racks, stirring once halfway till the vegetables are tender and starting to brown, about 25 minutes. Return them to the bowl, stir in the capers with vinegar and honey. Fourth step, season with the salmon with lemon zest, Italian seasoning, and a remaining 1/4 teaspoon each of salt and pepper. Place on one of the baking sheets. Roast on the lower rack until just cooked, about 6 to 12 minutes, depending on thickness. Serve the salmon with the farro, vegetable carbonara, and lemon wedges. Tips: most wild salmon and now some farm is considered a sustainable choice. Get more info about sustainable seafood at seafoodwatch.org. And I see I don't have enough time to offer you another recipe, so I'm going to sign off at this point. This is Mark Breitenstein. I've been reading from eatingwell.com, and wish you all a good week.